Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. The Alberta Ingenuity Fund is one of the newer kids in the pack of research supporters. Biochemist Dr. Bill Bridger is the man in charge of this $500 million endowment from the province of Alberta. His most recent program has established industrial associateships to help young companies hire the scientific expertise they need to grow their innovative technologies. Proteomics researcher Dr. Ababar Jamir is among the first six recipients of the industrial associateships. And on the forestry side, habitat biologist Margaret Connolly has her hands full sorting through over 300 research projects undertaken by the Sustainable Forest Management Network. Her task is to set up an effective process for knowledge transfer, getting all that good scientific information into the hands of industry and policymakers. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. The Alberta Ingenuity Fund is an endowment of $500 million the Alberta government set up just a couple of years ago. The money is earmarked for scientific research in the fields of engineering and natural sciences. The man at the helm of Alberta Ingenuity is Dr. Bill Bridger, someone who's run the funding gauntlet many times in his own research career.
Well, my background, I come from Winnipeg, and I went to the University of Manitoba through honors chemistry. I was all set to go and work in industry in Sarnia until one fateful Saturday morning when I rode my bicycle past the medical school in Winnipeg, which is a separate place, went in for some reason and started poking around and met a man whose name was Leonard Cohen, not the poet, but Leonard Cohen, the biochemist, who took an interest in me and asked me what I was doing. And the next thing I knew, he was my PhD supervisor. I was so interested in the work that he was doing in enzymology and catalysis. So my PhD was in biochemistry. I then went off and worked in the chemistry department at UCLA with a man named Paul Boyer. And 25 years after that experience, Paul won the Nobel Prize somewhat for the work that we were doing there. So I feel I've got about 0.1% of a Nobel Prize in my pocket. I like to think so anyway. From that experience, I joined the biochemistry department at the University of Alberta, a very strong department. Was chair of that department from 87 to 93 when I joined the central administration, working with Martha Piper, who was then vice president of research. In 95, I left the University of Alberta, became vice president of research at the University of Western Ontario, and stayed there until I was hired to this job in 2001.
You've dealt with research all of your life. What's it like for people, if you look at your own experience, in trying to get research off the ground and get the funding that you need to make it a success?
Well, research is an extremely creative thing. I mean, it's a matter of, first of all, of ideas, and then having the wherewithal, and by that I mean the money and the hands to explore the ideas. I know when I was an active researcher, I always got my best ideas in the shower with nowhere to write them down. But I mean, they come to you at the oddest times. The fun part about research is the inspiration and how an idea might fit into existing theory or take it another step. The hard work is showing whether or not the theory has any merit, and to do that, one is constantly in the search for dollars. And it's too bad that so many of our creative researchers are having to spend so much of their time year after year in the hunt for resources that are necessary, primarily the cash that's necessary to keep their labs operating. Running a lab is very much like running a pizza joint. It's like a small business. Sometimes it's even mom and pop. And there's the problem of cash flow. And so the cash flow consists of grants coming in, and at the same time, the people who work there are dependent on the grants, have the same kind of interest in success, as do the people who are working in a small business.
How do you take that then and apply it to what you're doing now as the head of the Alberta Ingenuity Fund?
Well, the Ingenuity Fund doesn't spend a lot of its money on operations for individuals. Our mandate here is to increase the research capacity of Alberta. So that, roughly speaking, breaks down into two areas. One is recruiting young minds, very bright people who will come here to take part of their training here and hopefully establish their careers there. So for that, we have student and fellowship and other programs. The other is to encourage what we might call larger science, not quite big science, which would be synchrotrons and giant telescopes, but the kind of research that involves collaborations between people and between disciplines. And so we're trying to set up things that we call Ingenuity Centers that are uncontested world-class organizations, groupings of people who have extraordinary talent in work in areas that are in the long-term interest of Alberta's economic growth and quality of life.
Yours is a new group, a new venture, and yet it builds on another model, I believe, that set up 25 years ago, mm-hmm. the Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research. What are the similarities and the differences?
Mm-hmm. The Heritage Foundation for Medical Research has been a fabulous story that is envied across the country and admired around the world, and we couldn't have a better model. I'd say we were inspired very much by its success. The similarities are in many of our programs. I mentioned studentships, fellowships, and some faculty support. And that is focused, of course, in the Medical Foundation on the universities, the medical schools and other health areas in the universities, and in the hospitals. One of the differences between them and us is that our mandate, first of all, I consider to be much broader because it extends from engineering to agriculture to information technology to all of the basic sciences, chemistry, physics, biology, wildlife biology, ecology, vast range of things compared to the broad but, in my mind, relatively narrow scope of the Heritage Foundation. Another difference is that our mandate doesn't stop at the universities. We have a very clear mandate to include industrial research support. We're trying to find ways to bring brilliant people in the universities into the view of industry and have collaborations work that way. We're also, through a new program, we're putting money directly into industry by providing salary support for recent master's and PhD graduates to go out and work in industrial settings. And that the main uptake on that program so far, I'm delighted to say, is small business. So small spin-off companies, small fledgling companies that need another pair of hands need to explore the opportunity of a new research area on their particular product or process, we can provide them with significant help. And in the same context of the mom and pop operation that I spoke of before with small business.
You're still very young in terms of the organization. Can you say you have some successes already?
Well, we are young, and we have to be careful how fast we spend money because most of our investments are not for 1 year. They tend to be multi-year, and we don't want to tie our hands with long-term investments in the first couple of years and then have no money to spend in year three. So we're ramping up slowly. Two of our successes that we're most proud of are two of the centers that were launched last fall. One is an Ingenuity Center in carbohydrate science that is based at the University of Alberta, but includes people from the University of Calgary as major participants. It is built on the legacy of the great carbohydrate chemist Ray Lemieux and the people that his reputation brought to the province. We're adding to that by make sure that this legacy continues in perpetuity and grows and is sustained, and that within 5 years I'm confident that we'll have one of the world's absolutely top places for carbohydrate chemistry and carbohydrate science. Another major success that we have is the Alberta Ingenuity Center in Machine Learning, which is based in the Computer Science Department at the U of A. It includes some brilliant people who are interested in artificial intelligence, including Jonathan Schaefer, who's the world's top electronic checker player. The work that they're doing in artificial intelligence has implications and applications that are so wide that everywhere you look, you see potential applications in Alberta industry. They just had their first international advisory board meeting last week. I was there, and I can't tell you how paternally proud I felt when I heard the remarks of the visitors from Europe and Japan and the U.S. who saw what was being started up here and the tremendous potential that it has. It's very, very exciting.
You know, that's something I hear all the time when I talk to people, that people are actually looking to Alberta and what is happening in the research community here, how we're funding and encouraging research. And they have lessons to take home and try. Is that what you see? What is it that we're doing different here?
Well, let me say that the people from, aforementioned people from Germany, Japan, and U.S. asked for copies of my slides because they wanted to go back to their constituents and show what was being done in Alberta. Let me say also that I spent 6 years in Ontario, where the advantages that Alberta had in the medical area through the HFMR were tremendously envied. In effect, then when I was working in Ontario, I felt that we just couldn't compete with Alberta in terms of the recruitment of star researchers in areas that HFMR was supporting. I never forget the day when the creation of Alberta Ingenuity was announced in the Globe and Mail, and it said that the Alberta government is putting $500 million as an endowment to support science and engineering. I read that article as Vice President Research at Western, walked into the president's office and said, "Paul, we're finished. We haven't got a chance. The Alberta's now, they've had this huge advantage until now in medicine, and now the same thing is going to hold in engineering and the natural sciences. The only thing that I think is necessary is some more enrichment of the endowment, because that area is so broad, and without an even stronger endowment, we won't be able to do all of the things that we hope we're able to do in the next few years."
Thank you very much, Bill.
Great pleasure, Cheryl. Thank you.
That was Dr. Bill Bridger, President and CEO of the Alberta Ingenuity Fund. The Alberta Ingenuity Fund recently announced its new Industrial Associateship Program. This will allow small, high-tech startups and other companies with limited funds to acquire research expertise. Among the first six recipients is Dr. Ababar Jamir, who came from Ethiopia to work on his PhD with microfluidics pioneer Dr. Jed Harrison at the University of Alberta. Their startup company is called Advanced Integrated Microsystems.
The reason I came to Alberta is actually to pursue my PhD training with Professor Jed Harrison. And the reason I chose Alberta and particularly Jed Harrison's group is that when I saw first the first papers on miniaturization of analytical systems published by Jed Harrison, I was really intrigued and excited, because the field was fairly new. It was only 5 years old when I joined the group. And I just want to learn something new and something exciting.
Now, with your PhD work and now also the work you're going to be doing with the grant that you've received from Alberta Ingenuity Fund, what got you into the proteomics side of things?
The company that I will be working with, Advanced Integrated Microsystems, is interested to utilize the technology that was developed in Jed Harrison's laboratory here at the University of Alberta to use it for proteomics analysis. Because in proteomics right now, the procedures currently followed in this field are highly time-consuming, and procedures can take up to 24 hours just for sample preparation. So what we do here is we take advantage of this technology that has been developed in Jed's group to speed up these procedures. By speed up, I mean sample preparation and analysis. We are thinking to do it in a matter of probably hours or even minutes. So there is a significant time gain, and that will advance the field of proteomics. And the scientific research products from Ames will create new products that will be used by medical researchers to better understand health-related issues.
Now, is this as a result of work that you had done on your PhD?
Yes, partly. Partly it's from what I did for my PhD training, because in my PhD training, I was interested to develop methods to incorporate stationary materials or beads into microfluidic devices for sample preparation before analysis, which is in fact the bottleneck right now in proteomics. So we achieved that. We demonstrated that microfluidics can be packed with stationary materials and proteins can be separated, pre-concentrated, and detected by mass spectrophotometers. Partly, my PhD training has been or will be used in the company.
What is proteomics?
Proteomics is a new field which is an important stage of drug development, which studies the entire differential output of proteins by cells under disease, drug, or environmental change.
What else have you been working on?
The other part of my project was to develop automated systems for biochemical warfare detection, and that project was done in collaboration with two industries here in Alberta. Both are here in Canada, Microline and Dicor Technologies. And the project was funded by the U.S. Defense and DRES from Sheffield. And that project, we developed automated and portable instrumentation using microfluidics devices to analyze biochemical warfares released in the air.
So is that the sort of thing that a soldier could carry around on his back?
Yes, that was the idea, actually, to develop portable instrumentation so that a soldier can carry it on the backpack and take it to the field in the war area and see or monitor the environment if any toxic or biochemical warfare is released in the environment so that they can use the proper mask if it is released.
So now you're taking that sort of technology and applying it to the medical arena. What are some of the things that you have to overcome or some of the problems you might have to deal with in order to get this new project off the ground and into the marketplace?
A number of things will be actually required to show the application of microfluidics in the field. We already have demonstrated the potential of microfluidic systems here in Jed's group at the University of Alberta to do protein analysis, so that's the first stage. And the second stage is in fact much more challenging, because we'll be using and analyzing real samples. Right now we are taking standards and demonstrating that we have the technology to do this kind of analysis. So there are a number of challenging steps to be encountered, and with the technology that we have right now and the technology that we are planning to do with Ames in the next 3 years, I'm sure we'll have a product that will speed up this field of proteomics, and the product will be available in the market within the next 3 years.
What has it meant to you actually getting this grant from Alberta Ingenuity in order to go ahead with this project?
This award is actually very, very important for me, because it will allow me to gain valuable experience conducting research in an industrial setting. And there are relatively few opportunities here in Canada for industrial scientists to advance their careers. And most most students, actually, after they get their PhD, they go to the United States where there's numerous industrial positions available. So this scholarship will definitely give me this opportunity to advance my training to be an industrial researcher in the field of microfluidics and proteomics here in Alberta. And Alberta, particularly the University of Alberta, is a leader of microfluidics and nanotechnology. So I'm very, very glad that I got this scholarship, and it's very important for me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Ababar Jamir, a research scientist in proteomics and microfluidics. He is one of six recipients of the new Alberta Ingenuity Fund Industrial Associateships. This week marks National Forestry Week across Canada. Over the last 8 years, the Sustainable Forest Management Network has played a key role in helping to change the way forestry is done in this country. The SFM network is hosted by the University of Alberta. Researchers from across Canada work in partnership with industry, First Nations people, and government agencies to build the scientific knowledge we need to improve our stewardship of forest ecosystems and resources. Of course, that doesn't mean everyone is speaking the same language, at least not yet. One of the hot topics at the recent Sustainable Forest Management Conference in Edmonton was exactly that, knowledge exchange. How do you take all this wonderful scientific research and translate it into legislation and new industry practices? One of the people charged with working through this daunting task of knowledge transfer is Margaret Donnelly, a habitat biologist who lives in New Brunswick and works with clients in Alberta and Manitoba.
I've worked in research and I work with the industry, and I'm one of these people that has a fairly good understanding of both the worlds, and they're hoping that I can bridge the gap.
Why is there a gap?
I think there's a gap because the worlds are very different and very far apart. There's different things that drive the scientists, and there's different things that drive the industry. The scientists are looking at publications and at very pure research in most cases, and the industry is looking for answers. Scientists like to have all the answers before they move forward and say, I can tell you for sure that this is where it's going. The industry hasn't got time to sit back and wait. So in the absence of new knowledge or science to support things, you often move forward because there's a job to be done.
What are some of the things that you're looking at or trying to do in order to, I guess, help these two very diverse groups communicate?
I think the most important thing is to develop relationships between the two groups. The network has been around for about 8 years now, and one of the things that I believe has been really important in the network is all the relationships that's been established. It took a while to get those together, but you can see it in the network. I've been around for 6 years now, and I see a lot of relationships that have from the start and have bloomed and are now moving forward. And so this development of relationships helps you to better understand what each group is doing. And the key to the implementation is asking the right questions, and you ask the right questions by getting to know what each other needs.
How do you know? How do you judge what the right question is, except in hindsight?
Well, that seems to be one of the problems that we're facing now with the knowledge exchange program. We're trying to synthesize and move forward a backlog of research, about 300 projects that have been done. And many of them weren't done with an endpoint in mind. So we are working with the partners in the network, both the industry, First Nations, and the government organizations, to develop SFM frameworks, which will help them to describe what sustainable forest management means to them and help them to lay a path forward to achieve sustainable forest management. And in that, we will notice that there's gaps of knowledge along the way, and we will either have the knowledge exchange synthesis products which can fit into the gaps, or that will show us that we need to do research in those areas if we have no knowledge to plug in there.
It seems to me, though, that you're really working in an environment where it's essentially you're standing on shifting sands, because as you try and find out things and you come up with some answers to some questions, within that you're also dealing with a change in philosophy or business practices or economics or environmental concerns. How do you deal with that?
That's a good point. I think that you're right. There's sometimes the sand seems to be shifting, and then sometimes it feels that it's not moving at all. One of the things that's really important in order to move research forward is that we have a policy framework that will enable us to implement research. In many cases across Canada, that framework is not there, that policy environment is not there. And as you know, politicians and legislation takes a long time to develop and to pass. And so that seems to me to be one of the big roadblocks is how do we link science directly to policy development and be able to provide us an environment to move forward.
What are some of your next steps that you're going to take?
Well, the next steps, first of all, is to take the 300 research projects that we have and sort of synthesize them down into a framework that will show us how all of the different projects relate to each other. And once we have that, then we will have some products, if you will, to take to the partners and actually try to get them to help to implement them and move them forward. But right now we have so many different silos, different projects that have not been linked. So the big problem is to link them and to get them into either best practices or into guidelines to help people move forward.
You're leading some discussions here at the conference for the Sustainable Forest Management Network. What are the points that you're trying to get across, or what's your message to the people who are here?
I guess the first one is please be patient. We have a large backlog of information that we're going to try to move forward. And as you can imagine, we've got a very wide-ranging group of clientele that we're working with, whether it be industry or First Nation or government partners. Everybody has different needs. It's very difficult to find a one-size-fits-all answer. So we're trying a number of different strategies, and a number of different products will be provided in order to try to address this very wide-ranging need. So I would say that my message is that we're starting. The KEAT program is actually a Band-Aid kind of approach. We should have had much more planning in the front end of this process, and so KEAT is addressing a backlog, and I'm hoping that as we're talking about here at the conference, if we can do more thinking up front, that we will have less and less that KEAT needs to deal with, because the relationships have been established and the questions have been asked, and we will know where to fit the answers.
Well, you certainly have your work cut out for you, but don't beat yourself up on the back. I mean, it's tough enough just for the ordinary person to understand the science and what's going on, but we all know that it's important in the end. So I wish you good luck.
Thank you.
That was Margaret Donnelly, a habitat biologist and knowledge exchange consultant with the Sustainable Forest Management Network. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Ingenuity Fund, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the University of Lethbridge, the National Institute for Nanotechnology, the Alberta Conservation Association, Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, the Capital Region Innovation Center, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, True North Energy, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, Alberta Research Council, ICOR, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.